Robbie is a guy who wrote Light My Fire. You're asking me what was the song that broke the band, and it was Light My Fire in the summer of 1967, the summer of love, 2 years virtually to the day after Jim and I sat on the beach and he sang the Moonlight Drive and whatnot to me. But Robbie Krieger is the guy who wrote the song Light My Fire. If it hadn't been for Robbie Krieger, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it right now.
Robbie, how did that come to you, the song?
Oh, boy. I wish I knew. I'd write another one.
You have, man. I mean, Robbie's written Love Me Two Times, for God's sake. Robbie wrote Lover Madly. I mean, Robbie's written... Robbie's a hit machine.
Touch Me.
Touch Me, yeah.
Touch It. Touch Me.
Well, you know what? When at first, you know, Jim was writing the songs. He was a songwriter. Yeah. You know, nobody else had written any songs. But we realized we didn't have enough originals, and so Jim says, well, you know, you guys go ahead and try and write something. So I went home, and I said, okay, I'm going to write something that's going to be as good as Jim's stuff. This got to be pretty heavy duty, you know. So I said, okay, I'll do something about the four elements, earth, air, fire, or water. So I picked fire because, you know, I always liked the song Play With Fire by the Stones. So I said, okay, I'll write something about fire. And that's how it started. And it took me about a couple of weeks maybe to come up with the basis of the song. And I brought it into the guys, and they loved it. And we all worked it out. And Ray came up with that brilliant, you know, introduction part.
Uh-huh.
And John came up with the beat, the kind of a Latin thing. You know, I had more visions of more of a kind of a Hey Joe kind of a beat for it. But, you know, that was the good thing about the Doors is we all put our own two cents in, and especially Jim, you know, I would always tell him how I heard the song, and he'd always change it, but it would always be better.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. As the group grew, and I mean, you guys had, you know, you had almost that instant success once you got going. When did you two start seeing the, I guess, the lifestyle change of Jim Morrison, going from, you know, the college kid to someone who probably was beginning to become self-destructive?
Well, that never changed. He was like that from the beginning.
Was he really?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, Jim said that they used to have to carry him home in college from the parties and stuff, you know. And, you know, he always had that in him, I think. You know, it just kind of came out more, I think, as time went on. And, you know, when Jim got power, as Billy James would say. Billy James was the guy who signed us to Columbia Records in the before our record deal with Elektra. Of course, nothing ever happened with it, but he said that, boy, if Jim Morrison ever gets power, look out.
Yeah, absolutely. The movie, and, you know, I didn't think the movie was particularly a good movie. It was kind of neat to watch just because I knew I was going to be talking to you two, but I don't think it really depicted what really happened. It probably skimmed things. But I did notice that when Kilmer was playing the Morrison role, the two who played you two would tend to look at each other on stage where this wiped-out Jim Morrison character was doing whatever he did. Did those things happen where you two kind of like rolled your eyes to each other?
Oh, yeah, that happened. many times, you know. But, you know, more often than that would happen, I mean, it was like magic on stage, you know. I mean, you know, Jim might do something weird, and he always did. But, you know, and we never knew what he was going to do, and that was the fun part of it, you know. So we would go off on a trip every night. And, you know, sometimes it would be a bum trip.
Yeah.
But most of the time it was great fun, and... It was sort of like jazz, you know. It was like improvisation.
Ray, did you ever get to the point where you two thought, oh, no, we're not going to get on, we're not going to make this concert tonight with him?
Well, there was Miami. That was one that we didn't quite complete. But no, Jim was always there. He always... of course, his reputation is the weirdest, farthest out guy ever. How did you ever follow him, Ray? Where he went off and how did you... it was all an improvisation. We're all jazz musicians. The whole point of it was to create a ceremony to release the Dionysian impulse in man, to have a ceremony of joy and celebration, but also a sort of a seance to palliate the dead, as Jim said. So there was madness and chaos, but there was also joy and spontaneity and love and excitement. It was an age that we can't even understand now. And Oliver Stone has done Jim Morrison a great disservice by turning him into the caricature, concentrating on the drunken Jim Morrison.
Right.
Actually, there was a poetic Jim Morrison who was very intelligent, very artistic, very poetic. Hey, poets, drink, man. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the bar. You know, if you don't. Listen, Jim's going to do some weird stuff on stage. Is it so weird you can't handle it, Robbie Krieger? I don't think so. Ray, what about you? Are you man enough to handle it? Well, you're damn right I am, man. If you can't handle it, get off the stage. Get out of here. You don't belong in this band. If it's too intense for you, go somewhere else.
Was he a good person?
Of course he was, man. There were two of them. Jim was a great guy. Jimbo was not so good, but Jimbo is the demon that came out of that bottle of rum.
Uh-huh.
You know, they said there's a demon in the bottle. What does that mean, man? There's another personality that'll take over. So when he was intoxicated, when he was drunk, certainly when he was stoned, he was very cool. It was the alcohol. He had a genetic predisposition to alcoholism, and that's ultimately what did Jim Morrison in. It was the alcohol.
They called him the Lizard King.
Huh? He called himself the Lizard King. He said, I am the Lizard King. I can do anything. But it's a character. It's not Jim's. He's the self-proclaimed Lizard King. And you know what? That works with Elvis Presley is the King.
The King.
What's Michael Jackson? The King of Little Boy. The King of Pop. And Jim Morrison, the Lizard King. Well, that... You know what that did? That brought out the that whole subconscious... what's the thing that the snakes do, the motion?
Recoil.
Well, it's like the inner brain is the snake brain.
Lizard, right, the alembic, something like that.
All that is buried deep within, and we wanted to tap into that, and that is what rock and roll taps into.
Well, and you're right, Ray, because in the movie, it showed it like it was a drunken, stoned Jim Morrison who didn't know what he was doing on stage. Wasn't that a shaman dance he was doing?
Of course, man. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, he was intoxicated with the moment. He wasn't a drunk. I don't think people today, and certainly Oliver Stone, didn't understand LSD. LSD is a hallucinogenic substance that opens the doors of perception. A shaman is a guy who steps through that doors of perception and is probably, basically, a slightly cracked individual who dwells here and there, dwells in the world of the demons and the spirits. And Morrison is a 21st century, 20th century shaman is what he was. We were the Electric Shaman's band. We were the ones who were driving him and pushing him and urging him on to go further and further and further.